Misfits, welcome back to the Misfits and Mysteries podcast. We're your weekly podcast for everything weird and wacky, from Bigfoot and aliens to psychology and history and everything in between. We are your hosts, Emmy.
And Steve.
So Steve, how was your Super Bowl?
It was okay. The game sucked. Tom Brady cheated. He has never won a Super Bowl without the assistance of the refs. He's a fraud. Disgusting game. It's despicable. He should have won MVP.
Words.
The defense should have won the MVP, not him. I'm not saying the Bucs didn't deserve to win. I'm just saying that Tom Brady didn't deserve the MVP. Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, former Jets head coach, God bless him. He suffered through us, just won a Super Bowl as the defensive coordinator. He was awesome. He held the Chiefs to 9 points. He is MVP, not Brady, that old ass man. I hate him.
Wow, these are fighting words.
I hate him like I hate the Patriots. How about you? How did you enjoy the Super Bowl?
I don't want to sound like too much of a girl, but I don't know anything about football. But I know enough to know that it was a really boring game.
Yeah, it was a terrible game.
But I had a good time because my roommate and I had two friends over and it was dip day. So everyone brought a different dip and that was our dinner.
Nice. So
chicken wing dip, spinach and artichoke dip, ranch dip. And for dessert, we had dirt and worms. So it was a dessert dip.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
I was up in Vermont with my mom, my dad, my sister and brother-in-law. So we had a 7-layer dip. We had cocktail weenies. We had guac. There's buffalo chicken, potato skins. We had a lot of food and I ate a lot of it. And it was delicious. And watched an awful game, and I drank a lot of alcohol. And it was a good time.
That is a good time. That's what you want on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed. This is how it ended.
Yeah, it was a pretty uneventful game. And was there any commercials that stood out to you?
The one that repeated a lot that stood out to me in a negative way was the Paramount Plus commercials. Because who the hell would pay for a Paramount subscription service? Who the hell is only a fan of Paramount?
And they must have dropped. So Super Bowl ads, it's $5 million for every 30 seconds. And they must have had at least 3 or 4 ads.
I know. So they were dropping millions and millions of dollars. And like, maybe if we make people aware, they'll all of a sudden become fans of Paramount.
Like $20 million, and that's before any of the production costs, anything that it costs to have talent on. I cannot believe how much money they spent.
It's not like I'm saying Paramount's like a bad production company, but who the hell is a fan of just Paramount? Who's like, oh, Paramount's making a streaming service. I can't even name like a Paramount property.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's why they had the guy from Survivor, obviously, Jeff Probst. They had Snooki, trying to think who else.
They had Dora the Explorer.
The Explorer?
Dora the Explorer.
Is that what it is?
I think so. Or is this a Mandela effect?
I think it's Explorer.
It is Explorer. Wow. Perhaps that was a Mandela effect there. You're right, it's Dora the Explorer. I thought it was Dora the Explorer. I had no idea.
Her song is like, Dora, Dora, Dora the Explorer.
Hola, Boots. That came out like right when we were kids.
The only things I actually remember from Dora are when I was a little bit older and I was just like pissed off. And I was like, why can't you see this map right in front of your face? Like, it was a bad show. Like actually, truly a bad show.
It ran from 1999 to 2019. It ran for 20 years.
They were still making Dora in 2019.
How they only make 8 seasons over 20 years?
I feel like kids can watch the same show or movie over and over and over again and don't get sick of it. Like, if you have one of those movies.
I agree. Like, there are things I'd watch, like, over and over again, and it's just like, oh, miserable. I couldn't imagine doing that now.
I had these friends growing up who they had to watch George of the Jungle every single night or they couldn't go to bed.
That's insane. Like, I watched The Land Before Time like 1,000 times.
That was my favorite movie. To watch
it. I know it is. I used to like that.
Yeah.
You know what movie was like horrific. The Brave Little Toaster, there was so much murder in that movie and death.
Yeah, the stuff we used to watch as kids was such garbage.
So today we are joined by the lovely Olivia from Kid Nation. It was incredible. We'll get to that interview in a little bit. We had an awesome conversation with her. We learned a lot about what it's like being on Kid Nation. We're so excited to share it with you. So stay tuned.
And even if you didn't follow Kid Nation with us, it's actually a really interesting look into any kind of reality show, a little bit behind the scenes. And this is like even crazier because it's with kids. So
yeah. So before we get into our episode, I have a presentation to share with Emmy here. No one else gets to see this right now, but this is a PowerPoint presentation I made. Apparently I made this during COVID. I don't actually remember it, but I stumbled upon it yesterday. Can you see it?
Steve, you made this during COVID?
Yeah. It's called Why I Deserve a Pet Duck.
When you told me you made this, I just assumed that you made this when you were like 12 years old.
No, I made this like a few months ago and I forgot about it.
Oh my God. Okay. Why I Deserve a Pet Duck by Steve. Here we go.
Reason one, Casey wants a new brother or sister. They say puppies keep an old dog young, but we don't want Casey to feel like he's going to be replaced. A duck can be like a little sibling, but he will know you love him more, so he won't be depressed. It would be so cute if a duck rode on Casey's head or back. Just look at those ducks and dogs playing.
It is really cute, you guys. You should look up pictures of ducks and dogs.
And specify playing, because ducks and dogs is a lot of dogs hunting ducks.
Oh, well.
Reason two, monetize. Everyone likes a duck, so I can easily make an Instagram and Twitter and even YouTube and become a trillionaire. Picture of a Daffy Duck holding stacks of money. And we can become the new host of Aflac, and we can destroy them from the inside.
You would make this slide. Like, just get money on the brain all the time. Like, why I should get a certain kind of pet, because it'll make me rich.
Reason three. We can form an alliance with a waterfowl. As we all know, there are legions of waterfowl that live in our bay. If we want to ensure an alliance with them, we're going to need a duck to work as a middleman.
I mean, you can't argue with that.
I told you about what happens every time we have a major winter storm here.
No.
All of the geese and ducks and, like swans and other waterfowl congregate in the bay around my dock.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking like hundreds of them. They invade. They're an invading force. Reason four, teacher's responsibility. I will learn responsibility. Reason five, someone needs to be named Archibald in this family. We won't name her kid Archibald, so a duck can bear his name. Reason six, Nicole wants one. Much like a dog, Nicole's my cousin. Much like a dog, it's tradition for me to get the cool animal Nicole wants first. Dogs, fish, turtles, etc.
That's a good reason.
And that's my presentation.
A plus.
Thank you.
Give you a duck in a heartbeat.
Yes. All right. So let's get into some announcements before we start the show. We said Olivia's on the show, so stay tuned for that. Go to our website. You can read our blogs and you can sign up for our newsletter. Our newsletter comes out the first Friday of every month. We highly recommend it. If you want to support the show, you can buy our merch on our TeePublic store. Link will be in the episode notes and will also be on our website. Also, feel free to donate a couple bucks to us on Buy Me a Coffee.
We're thirsty.
We want coffee.
Neither of us drink coffee, but
I don't know. A couple bucks is never bad.
A tea, maybe. You could buy me a chai tea.
Exactly. Also, if you like the show, tell a friend. Word of mouth is still the best marketing, and it helps us so much. So if you're enjoying the show, please, please, please give us a referral. Also, subscribe to our show on any podcast platform you're on to make sure you never miss an episode. It also helps us and tells Apple and all the other things how cool we are and makes us show up more. Finally, we're going to start reading off all of the nice reviews you guys are going to give us on either Podchaser or Apple Podcasts. Once we have enough of them compiled, we will get to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be joined by Campbell McLaren next week, the co-founder of the UFC, former manager of Larry David. He's been in television forever. He created Combate Americas. Amazing guy. Literally our most famous guest to date. So what are you talking about, Emmy?
So in honor of Valentine's Day, I am talking about Elizabeth Clarer. I think that's how you say it. who was one of maybe the first woman to ever allege that she had sexual relations with an alien.
Wow. That's crazy. And I'm going to be talking about Operation Acoustic Kitty, which is the time that the CIA thought it could train a cat to become a spy.
Pretty sweet.
So let's jump into the episode. So today I'm talking about Operation Acoustic Kitty. Operation Acoustic Kitty is the story of the time the CIA blew what is now the equivalent of $80 million trying to train a cat to become a special agent.
Dun, dun, dun.
So $80 million from taxpayers was blown on this absurd idea. And you thought it was crazy that someone greenlit Kid Nation. Who the hell greenlit this idea to turn a cat into a spy?
I mean, it's not the worst idea anyone's ever had.
The CIA thought, you know who the Soviets would never suspect was an American spy? A cat. So their idea is, let's implant a cat with a bunch of transmitters so it'll go undetected and listen into private conversations. Before we dive into what actually happened, just think for a second. What are cats not known for doing, Emmy?
I don't know.
What you want them to do? This is not like a dog where you can train it easily. Cats are very free-willed, so they're already setting themselves up for failure. So Project Acoustic Kitty, as it has been named, took 5 years to develop the technology and train this cat.
Develop the tech? What technology?
Put like a radio transmitter and stuff in the cat's body. So this took $80 million, 5 years. No one actually knows who came up with the idea, but for some reason they greenlit it, and it became a joint project between the CIA's Office of Technical Service and the Office of Research and Development.
No one wanted to take credit for it.
Yes, no one wanted to take credit for this failure because they thought a cat could become a freaking secret agent. So this is in the 60s, right? They didn't declassify exactly what time span, but this is going on at the same time as MKUltra. So we're like testing drugs on people, trying to get psychics, and trying to train a cat to become a secret agent.
They were doing a lot of weird things.
Yeah, a lot of weird things. So the engineers had their work cut out for them because they had to make the cat an effective spy with the implants. So the implants could not affect the cat's natural movement or cause any discomfort that would make the cat try and dislodge the equipment from under its skin. So that's what took like 5 years. So the components were a power source, a transmitter, and an antenna. And they would have to be able to withstand a cat's internal body temperature, humidity, and chemistry. So the CIA built a 3/4-inch long transmitter to embed at the base of the cat's skull. They planted a microphone in the ear canal of the cat, and the antenna was made from fine wire and woven all the way through the cat's tail to conceal it. So the tail basically is like the antenna that transmits the signal.
Okay.
And the thing that gave them the most trouble was the power source, the batteries, because cats are small. So they had to use small batteries, which didn't last very long for recording. So they originally tested the equipment on dummies before they went to live animals. And during these tests, the cats were monitored for the reaction to the equipment to ensure their comfort and to make sure that their maneuverability and behavior was normal. So after the agency weighed the pros and cons of the fallout from this going public versus the success, they decided, you know what? We're going to turn a cat into a cyborg secret agent. Because of course they did.
Of course they did.
And they chose an adult gray and white female cat to be like the first prototype, right? So the CIA technicians and agents watched the veterinary procedure. And after about an hour, they successfully created the first ever cyborg cat super spy. Or so they thought. So
cyborg cat super spy.
So this is my absolute favorite part of the story. After they've spent $80 million in value now, developing this whole process, now it's time to test to see if cats can be trained. So they did it backwards. They're like, okay, let's build the technology and then let's figure out if this is even possible with a cat.
Right?
Yeah.
Good brainstorming over here.
I feel like someone named Randy came up with this idea. I didn't think it through fully.
They were probably like taking all of the drugs that they were testing on.
Yeah, I know. Like, what if we got a cat? Like, yeah, but let's not test the experiment. Let's just build all the equipment first.
These guys were definitely just like Stone and like, dude, you know what would be so cool if we got like a cyborg cat super spy? We could do that.
After wasting $80 million in today's money.
$80 million.
On this cat.
Taxpayer dollars.
Taxpayer dollars. Then they started running her through various operational scenarios, and they realized that her behavior was very inconsistent, and her handlers were beginning to worry they made a very big mistake.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think they did too.
They made a terrible, terrible mistake.
You made a mistake the second you took this past, like, the idea phase.
Yeah, the second you were like, you fucking idiot. What are you talking about? All right, so then, in, like, the lab setting, they were actually able to successfully train the cat to move small distances and go to certain targets in locations that were familiar to her, which is good, right? Like, that was a good sign. But when they tested it outside, but, like, not in the fields, outdoors, they quickly learned that the cat would get bored, distracted, or just hungry and wander off.
Mm-hmm.
So they could not keep their focus. So eventually they got really pissed off about how, like, the cat's quote ADHD. So can you guess what they thought was a good way to fix the cat's attention span issues?
Did they like zap it or something?
No, they just installed more wires in it.
Oh.
Added wires.
It didn't have ADHD. It was just, you're putting a lot of weird things in his body.
I know. And also, it's a cat. Like, it's not going to listen to you. So they can now control the cat and its desire to wander off. So finally, the CIA is ready to take this cat out to test its capabilities as a spy. Just to paint the scene here, we have two guys in the park across the street on a park bench, right? They're like the marks the cat's supposed to go get to. The theory is we can get them to go to the Soviets, let's say, by like playing an interesting noise that the cat wants to naturally like listen to in their head. So it's like they want to go that way. So that's the whole idea. So these two guys are sitting there. We have these observation guys in this unmarked van with the cat. So they open the side door for the cat to let it out.
Mm-hmm.
The cat immediately gets hit by a taxi and dies on his way across the street.
Kidding?
I'm not kidding.
Dude, what?
The very first field test, the cat gets hit by a car and dies under a minute of them releasing it.
That's something out of a movie.
I know.
That's some Mean Girls shit.
I know.
You've seen Mean Girls, right?
I love Mean Girls, yeah.
Where she just walks out in front of the bus.
Regina George gets hit by the bus? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's literally that. Like, they spend all this time, all this money on this cat, and they let it out, and it gets hit by a car instantly because it wandered off.
Oh, my God.
Within under a minute of the first field test, it dies. And the CIA had to recover the corpse because they were scared the Soviets would steal the technology. And Operation Acoustic Kitty was a bust. And it was considered a major failure.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. How did you think that was going to go?
Seriously, this is the worst idea. So the project was officially abandoned in 1967 because the CIA realized that they had little to no control over what was deemed a, quote, phenomenally bad idea.
Yeah, sounds about right.
However, Robert Wallace, who was the former CIA director of technical services at the time, claims that the cat never died in a taxi accident.
Ooh.
He claims she was fired because she sucked at her job.
Yeah. I can see that too.
Wallace claims that the project ended solely because cats were too difficult to train, not because the spy kitty got squished. And Wallace also claims that the cat was actually put under surgery again, removed all the equipment, and lived a normal life after that.
I don't really believe that. They probably killed it putting wires into it and didn't want to tell anyone.
Yeah, probably. I think it got hit by a taxi cab.
I mean, that's a pretty crazy story, but I feel like that's not what happened.
I choose to believe that the two guys in the van put the cat out, watch it hit by a taxi, and you're like, oh, fuck.
That's just too good. It's too good to be true. Not too good. It's really sad.
It's sad, that cat, but the story is really too good to be.
That's a really sad thing that happened to that. It had a really sad life all around.
Yeah, but.
But
that was pretty funny. Like, not for the cat's death, but the fact that they have this horrendous idea. It doesn't work. Then they test it in the field. Their cat just dies.
That is bonkers.
I know.
That's the weirdest story I've ever heard. I
know. Yeah.
I love that one.
That's the story of Operation Acoustic Kitty.
Hey, Misfits. Welcome back. We have a very special guest with us today. It's Olivia from Kid Nation. As you guys know, we have been listening and watching Kid Nation for a long time now. How many weeks, Steve?
Well, what, 13 episodes? Yeah, and then we skipped a week because we watched a movie instead. So it's been a while.
So it's been a while that we've been watching Kid Nation. And now that we're done, we have Olivia here to ask her some questions. So thank you so much for joining, Olivia.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? And I know you came out with a book about your experience on Kid Nation as well.
Yep. So my name is Olivia. I am 27 now. It always cracks me up because people expect me to still be 13. They contact me. They're like, why did you do XYZ? As if it happened yesterday. That always cracks me up. But I did write a book about my experience on Kid Nation. It's called Stronger Than You Think, The Sisters Who Survived Kid Nation. I'm not going to lie. I had a lot of fun with that subtitle. But it was a process that originally started as a way for me to kind of process that really weird experience that people just could not relate to. Right. And you know, eventually some of the fans of the show figured out that I had written it and kept asking me, oh, you need to release it. We want to see, like, you know, what happened and all this kind of stuff. And so I released it last year.
Awesome.
We actually literally just finished watching it. We recorded, he's taking a vacation. So we recorded early this week, but we literally finished watching it Saturday. So it's all fresh in my mind.
Yes.
I guess sort of like to start it off, a question that sort of goes with that is, I've obviously never been on a reality show, especially not when I was 10 at the time. I would have been 10 then. So I guess what I'm wondering is, I know for myself, I've had a lot of like things my parents made me do where like I hated it in the moment. And then later it's like, I have an incredible story to tell. So did you hate being on Kid Nation? And like, how did you feel? How did you feel right after, or like when you're a teenager versus like now when you're reflecting on it as a 27-year-old?
Yeah, it's definitely different. At the time, I actually was not the one out of Mallory and I that wanted to do the show. Mallory really wanted to be on the show. And my dad was like, well, we're not going to send our 8-year-old there alone. So you got to go with her if she's going to do this. And so that's why I was in that process. And I didn't think they'd ever pick us. And they did. So, you know, I got myself a fun little shock there when they actually did pick us. You know, as a high schooler, it was kind of like the fun, embarrassing thing that people knew about me. Like that was my identifier in high school, which cracked me up. Yeah, right. I always won the fun fact, you know, icebreaker at the beginning of the year kind of situation in school. But it's interesting because I think I look back at it as an adult and I'm like, who greenlit this? Like, this was such a bad idea. Who was like, you know what? You know what would be really entertaining? Children like crying and fighting in the desert for 40 days. That'd be really sick.
That was always my number one question. Like, who came up with this and who was sitting in a room and like they all were like, yeah, that's, let's do it.
Right. A whole room of adults had to agree to that.
Yeah.
Why?
So how did you and Mallory even find out about the show?
Yep. So my dad auditioned for Survivor. And this is, of course, back in 2007 when we were auditioning. So Survivor was a big deal back then. And he really wanted to be on Survivor. So he sent in, and I kid you not, an audition tape, because that's how long ago this was. And they called him not long after, and they left him a voicemail. And my dad is like, oh, my gosh, I'm totally going to be on Survivor. And then he called them back, and they said, no, we're not really interested in you. But we do know that you have kids. You mentioned you have kids. We're really interested in your kids for a new show that we're doing. And, you know, at first my parents were like, no, that's weird. Like, what are you even talking about? And, you know, my sister was 8 at the time and she heard about it. And she was like, we could be on TV? Seriously? And So, you know, they were like, all right, well, we'll let you guys audition for it. We'll let you see the behind the scenes process. That'll be kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know. And my mom would say, well, it'll be a really good experience for you guys, and you'll get to experience failure in a safe environment for us to process it with you. And I agreed with my mom. I thought there's no way this is going to happen. And then it did. And we both kind of had to stare at each other and be like, oh, crap, we have to do this now.
Man.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Emmy actually wants to be on Survivor. Fun fact.
I'm so obsessed with Survivor. So I actually have been like planning out my audition tape.
Yeah, I can't advise on being on Survivor, but I can tell you that as a child, it was a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's Kid Nation is almost Survivor for kids.
Yeah, a lot of the same producers who worked on Survivor worked on Kid Nation. That's why you see the similarities there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's very interesting. So what was it like kind of having Mallory on the show? Do you think that that helped you? Was it weird?
I think in some ways it was a good thing, and in some ways it was harder for me. So I think there were definitely times where, especially at the beginning, when we first got there, we don't know anybody. This is such a weird experience. And what they told us before the show even started filming was, this is going to be like a fun summer camp kind of show for kids. And obviously, if you've seen the show, you know there is nothing summer camp about that show. And so, you know,
you guys didn't get toys until like 30 days in.
Right, right. And so, yeah, it wasn't really like summer camp. And, you know, there were times where having Mallory there, it was just really nice to have somebody familiar, to have somebody from home. And that was comforting. But a lot of the time, there was a lot going on there that I did not necessarily want Mallory around. You know, you don't necessarily want your 8-year-old sister wearing like bedazzled Skechers to go and hang out at a bar with a 15-year-old who's clearly been drinking. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of times that I felt responsible for her. I always kind of laugh and say that I got to be a parent for 40 days, 13.
Yeah.
So it had its good and bad moments.
Was there actually alcohol there?
No. No. But who do you think taught all those kids how to do a Jaeger bomb with seltzer and soda?
Craig, probably, right?
Craig, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
he knew how to do it right off the bat. He saw the shot glasses. I didn't know what they were when I saw them.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen one before.
That's so funny.
A learning experience in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, watching that, like, I don't know how the hell you guys did, like, Jaeger bombs with sugar on sugar. At this point, that would give me, like, the sugar would give me, like, the worst hangover the next morning, more than like, me abusing alcohol for a night.
Yep.
Jeez.
Well, kind of along those lines, so some of the big names on the show, like Greg or Taylor, like, how accurately do you think that those types of people were depicted on the show, or was it more of just like a character?
With Taylor, it's tricky because Taylor was 10, you know.
Right.
And if you've met any 10-year-old, you know that some 10-year-olds at any given time can be bratty, and they can be terrible, and they can, you know, do whatever. But they can also be really sweet and funny, and, you know, she was like that. She had her bad moments and she had her good ones, and they just chose to show only her bad ones.
Yeah.
So my issue with the way that people talk about Taylor most of the time is that they don't understand that she was 10 years old and getting death threats sent to her house.
Oh,
they had to move.
Oh, my God.
Right. So I'm like, at the end of the day, like, she was 10. And it doesn't really matter, you know, if she had a bratty moment while we were there, you know, because
totally.
It's like,
totally.
You know. But Greg, yes, though.
Yeah, so with Greg, too, like, what I was curious about is he, like, conveniently enough, either they stopped showing it or, like, it just conveniently happened, where his temper seemed to vanish after that one little scene. I figured that must have been the producers being like, let's cut out everything just to fit our narrative.
Yeah. Greg, he and I did not get along very well. I'm being careful in my wording because I don't want him to sue me. He would get in trouble with some of the producers sometimes. So there are times when he was on better behavior because he knew they were going to kick him off the show if he didn't stop doing some of the things that he did.
Mm-hmm.
He at one point, the famous Greg story that he's now told publicly, so I feel like I can tell it without getting sued. The famous Greg story that all of us kind of thought was telling was that Greg got mad at Nathan at one point. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember Nathan. He won a gold star at one point, sometime mid-season or something like that. Nathan was an artsy kid, a very introverted kid, the kind of kid who gets picked on at school.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg picked on him quite a bit to the point where Greg at one point stole his canteen and peed in it.
Oh, wow.
And Nathan found out the hard way.
Wow.
That's tough. So,
the producers... and this is going to be some insight into that episode for you. The producers told Greg, dude, you cannot do this. Like, that's too far, man. You can't do that. I mean, they didn't even air the footage. And they told him, they were like, okay, you can stay on the show, but you have to nominate that kid for a gold star. Like, you really screwed him over. You have to nominate him for the gold star. So that's why you see that quick turn in the show where Greg is mad, doing all this crazy crap, and then they have to redeem him quick because they have to make sure that him nominating Nathan looks legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. It's so interesting to get kind of the behind the scenes of what was happening on the show. That's wild.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, being on a reality show is weird because you can't capture reality like that. You can't. You have to edit it into some sort of story that makes more sense than what actually happens. And so I think for a while there, some of us, when we first saw the show, were shocked because we were like, that's not how this happened. That's not the order that this happened in. But, you know, you kind of have to get over that at a certain point and just say, all right, you're going to tell whatever story you're going to tell.
Right.
So I guess sort of in line with that, but on the opposite side, what's the deal of the kids that they didn't bother giving any airtime to that too? Like, did they just suck and have no personalities? Or was it like they were just unfortunately on the chopping block?
Yeah, so that's the thing. They went to great lengths to cast this show. They found kids who purposefully, they found like the most diverse group of kids they could possibly find in terms of like some of them were from crazy wealth. Some of them were near homeless. I mean, like there was... and there was diversity like that in every aspect of life. Because I think they really wanted to make sure that something was going to happen. They didn't know what was going to happen, but they wanted to make sure something happened.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was tough because my best friend on the show is not shown, like, at all. And it was weird for me to see the show and for her to not be there because, you know, you hang out with somebody every day. And for them to not be in the story anymore feels like, oh, you took a big chunk out of this. Okay. Like you just didn't. Yeah. I always, honestly, I felt really bad for some of the kids who had to go through some of the same crap that all of us did and didn't get shown at all for it. I think that would have sucked.
The Hunter kid, they didn't even bother acknowledging he existed until like the 10th episode. There's like 3 episodes left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if y'all have read that book yet, but I had words about Hunter, but okay.
No, I haven't read your book yet. I didn't want to spoil anything. I'm definitely going to check it out, though.
Hunter was my boy band crush.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hey, it was the early 2000s. We all had one.
Oh, definitely. So, along those same lines, I'm interested to hear, once Mallory got the gold star, what that was like and, like, how your parents reacted to it.
So... I didn't know how my parents reacted to Mallory getting the gold star until we got home because I wasn't allowed to listen to that phone call. I asked them, I was like, can I listen at the door or something? Yeah. And they were like, no, like you can't even be in town at the same time. We're going to take you out for that part because we don't want you doing that. But, you know, Mallory winning the gold star was such a big moment for the two of us because we had talked, I mean, the first solid week and a half, 2 weeks while we were there was absolutely miserable. Mm-hmm. What they don't show you is that it was getting to be below freezing like every day, and then at night it would get into the negatives. And we lived in cabins with cracks in the walls and the floors and all this kind of stuff. And we were cold and we were hungry. We didn't know how to work the wood burning stove yet. And the crew eventually had to start giving us lunches every day because they didn't want us to look emaciated. Yeah, well, I'm glad they did. They figured it out quick because there wasn't time. It takes hours to make a meal on a wood burning stove that small.
Yeah.
They had to because they, you know, didn't want to get sued or anything.
Yeah, geez.
But we were thinking about leaving at that point. Both of us basically said, like, we're in this together. If one of us goes, we both go. And her birthday was coming up, and she was just kind of like, I can't do this. Like, I am 9 years old. I cannot do this. And I'm like, you know what? That's valid. And I look back at this, and I'm like, you know what? Again, still valid.
Yeah.
But, you know, her winning that, I think, kind of gave her a little bit of a boost. She really needed to talk to her parents and kind of feel like, okay, breathe. We can do this. This is not that long. Like, we can do this.
So what time of year did you guys film?
We filmed in April. We went there on April 1st is when we started filming. And it's interesting because all the people from New Mexico were like, oh, this is like the coldest, like weirdest April we've ever had. And of course we were all like, great.
Yeah. Wow. So that was during school then, right? So you guys actually missed some school.
Yeah, we missed school for that. I always laughed and said that I was a seventh grade dropout because my school wouldn't come back. They were basically just like, I don't know, pass your tests and we'll just pass you for the entire grade.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay, cool.
All right.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. My school was not, you know, the public schools in Indiana are not exactly equipped for what happens if a kid goes to be on a TV show. They don't have a policy for that.
They don't.
Yeah, I imagine they don't. So how's your stand-up comedy career going?
No. I feel like people ask me that all the time now. No, but the worst thing of all time, and I'm going to tell you the worst thing of all time, is that people on dating apps recognize me, and it is terrible. Because what they'll do, it's always like the aspiring comedians, though, who will be like, hey, will you listen to my stuff? I'm like, dude, I did stand up as a 12-year-old on TV like 15 years ago. I don't want to listen to your stand up. really, that sums my stand up career up right there.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was ballsy. I don't think I could have gotten up there.
Yeah, there's so much confidence for a teenager.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because that was a big moment for me confidence-wise because, you know, I was 13 and I got picked on at my school. I was not cool at all at my school. And so that was kind of a moment for me where I was like, all right, I'm going to push myself to do something different and really go for it. And I'm not going to lie to you, they cut most of that routine out, not just because of time, but because most of my jokes were about the producers. And they got mad at me because we weren't supposed to talk about the producers on camera. Cut most of it, but I always still think that's hilarious because I was very determined at the time to really stick it to the adults.
As you should.
I really applaud that. I don't think I would have been able to do that, especially not. I mean, what I would have been if it's April, I would have just have turned 10, like not even a full month before. So there's no way in hell I was getting up there and making fun of the producers.
I feel like when you're 13, like everything is embarrassing. Yes. Everything is awful, but like you got up there and you did it.
I did it, man. Now I'm gonna get made fun of for the rest of my life for it, but yeah, I did it.
I gotta say though, that's kind of brutal that you get recognized in the dating apps, because you'd think that a show that had one season when you were 13, like you would fly over here.
Yeah, you'd think, but every once in a while. And I know why that is, though. It's because nobody in Indiana is famous for anything. That's why. So we all know, like, the guy who got famous for, like, one YouTube video going viral of, like, his cat farting or something. Because, no, there's, like, two famous people in all of Indiana.
Yeah, that's too bad. What was your least favorite competition they made you do? Because some of those I looked at, I'm like, fuck that. There's no way in hell I would want to do that.
Oh, that's an easy question. It's the baked beans one. That one was awful. Yeah. And people are always like, what? It doesn't seem that bad. Like, you're just picking up a can. No. Let me frame this for you. We're in baked beans that are lukewarm with live hogs who are crapping in the baked beans. And you've got to dig your hand through what I presumed was a mixture of beans, piss, and crap. And that's what you're really reaching through. And that is exactly why Mallory and I, neither of us have eaten baked beans.
I wouldn't blame you.
All this time, you can't do it.
Between that one and the one where you guys had to chew gum.
The gumballs were terrible. Like,
I'm surprised no one got sick.
Okay, well, the gumballs, a lot of people had to go to the emergency dentist after the gumball situation. They just don't show that because, you know, it makes them look negligent.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of us can still pop our jaws out of place from the gumball thing.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. I'm sorry. I forgot this was a podcast for about 5 seconds.
I can pop my jaw.
I can pop my jaw in and out because, you know, I chewed like 100 gumballs in however much time.
Who greenlit that? That's so stupid.
Again, that is the question for this entire show is
so I guess another one of my questions is, like, in the show, it appeared as if no one got hurt, but kids got hurt all the time, right? And, like, what did they do about it?
Yeah.
Like, do they have a legit medical staff?
Oh, yeah. They had a doctor on set with us. And it's interesting because, yeah, there were people who physically got hurt. There was the bleach drinking incident that everybody's so famous for. And then, you know, there were a couple just here and there, like kids messing around kind of energy stuff. Mallory got kicked in the head during a showdown at one point and got carted off. And they don't show me through the rest of that showdown because I just sit there and ask the producers where she is and I refuse to do too much after that until they would tell me. And they still didn't. But you know, yeah, there were those regular kind of injuries all the time. The bigger thing that I think people are surprised about is that a lot of the kids had stuff like panic attacks while we were there.
I'm not that surprised. Like, that seems like a very stressful environment when you're between like 8 and 15.
Yeah. Right. They were not really equipped to handle that. They were not really equipped to handle that.
Was anyone really watching you? Like, making sure that you guys were okay?
Those are two very different questions. Was anybody watching you and was anybody making sure you were okay?
That's very true. I mean, I know everyone was watching you, but...
Yeah. I was going to say, we had people's eyes on us all the time.
Yeah.
Like, people would stand there and wait for you outside of the outhouse with a camera.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, dude, come on. Give me a minute. Just give me a second. And there's a hole in them, you know? You're like, come on, man. Like, they're not obviously not filming in there, but
yeah.
So people were watching. Were they making sure we were okay? That's debatable. It depends on what you mean by okay, I guess. Like, they made sure nobody got ripped limb from limb.
Yeah.
They made sure no one starved. You know what I mean? That was about it. Other than that, producers were how I learned that adults did not always have my best interest at heart, which is an interesting thing to learn as a kid. But there were a couple producers that were kind of notorious for being manipulative. There was one who everybody knew as the guy who made people cry on camera. And, you know, so were they making sure we were okay?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess if they're like survivor type producers who do those kind of shows are not used to working with kids.
Correct. They're used to being able to say and do anything to get a reaction out of people. Right. And I think with adults, that's a little bit different. With kids, it felt kind of icky.
I imagine. I mean, you're children. To go on to that, I don't really know what question's been asked a million times. And one thing I'm thinking is there a question or a story that you've never told before that you wanted to tell? Or even if it's not to be a good one, but there's like some little like detail that no one's ever asked you about that like resonates with you for whatever reason.
Oh, that's a new one. I was going to say, I can tell you off the top of my head, like people ask me the same couple of questions a lot. I think there's some stuff that people just don't know to ask. Like a couple of the kids there went on to do some crazy stuff after. Like DK is just like casually actually on an NBC show now. Like he's actor who made it. Yep. Yeah. Morgan was in Hamilton.
What?
Yeah. Morgan was in Hamilton. So there's stuff like that where I'm like, I know what all of these people are doing now. And you guys obviously don't know who to ask about, so I'm trying to think of the people who have done like really
Jared,
cool stuff,
like Jared's a pothead, right?
Jared, people always ask about Jared and I don't know what to say because Jared as an adult is a really private person. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't necessarily want a lot of people saying stuff about him. Now, he did hear the rumor that the Kid Nation fandom was spreading for a while that he was dead. And he responded to that. He was like, please tell everyone mm-hmm. I'm not dead. And we were all like, yeah, fair. I mean, that's fair, my dude. But
that's like the first thing if you type in Jared Kid Nation, it filters in really? Dead.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
People thought it was hilarious for a while until he had to like basically tell a couple of the kids, like, please tell everybody I'm not dead. I just don't like he's just private.
I don't blame him. Yeah. Like I'd probably want to be private.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I think a lot of us viewed privacy a little different after the show, because once you've been watched mm-hmm. like that constantly and you've been judged by like however many bajillions of people who watched it, you really do view privacy a little differently.
So I actually have a question from one of our fans, because we didn't plan this well. Like, we knew we were having you on for a while, and then we thought to tweet out if our fans had any questions like yesterday. Very bad planning on our part. So one person responded.
Nice.
But one question we got was, so what was people's reactions? Like your people you knew from home, like when you were a kid, like that you were on the show.
Well, as I've mentioned, it feels like 3,000 times, I'm from Indiana. And so it was a big deal. It was a big deal because nothing cool happens here, which is a little bit of an exaggeration, but mm-hmm. not by much. And you know, at the time, before the show came out, a lot of the kids at my school were like, this is so cool. What was it like? Da, 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 da. Well, at the beginning, before your show airs, mm-hmm. you can't say anything to anybody. They're not even legally allowed to really know that you were on the TV show unless you are basically allowed by the network to go and do mm-hmm. some sort of promotional thing, which we had done like a promotional interview or two like that. So people knew, but that was, I couldn't talk to mm-hmm. anybody about any of it before the show came out. Now, when the show did come out, it's interesting because at first people were like, oh, that's cool. And then they kind of figured out that I was going to be one of the villains. And they were like, oh, yeah, you suck.
Really? I didn't view you as a villain.
So there were some mixed feelings. You also have to keep in mind, this was 2007 and being a strong-willed girl was not really a thing back then. And I know it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but it really was. Because people were like, she's bossy, she's too loud, she's this, she's that. And obviously, like, people don't
view it that way. I was 10 years old in 2007, so I don't think I was really aware of these social norms at the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure they picked out also, like, the two times that you said something that would be seen as controversial.
Right, right. And they absolutely did. That's what always cracked me up, was that, like, people at my school thought I was super quiet. They thought I was just, like, basically nobody. People didn't even know who I was before I left for the show. And then I come back and suddenly everybody knows. And I'm like, I don't know how to handle this. I don't know how to handle any of this.
So did you stay in touch with anyone from the show?
Yes. For a while there, like quite a few years, a lot of us stayed in touch during high school, especially because I think even for, you know, honestly, for anybody, high school is kind of about finding your people and figuring out like where you're going to fit mm-hmm. into things. And a lot of us kind of felt like we couldn't relate to some of the kids our age because we had mm-hmm. had such a weird experience that it shaped us. And so a lot of us stayed in touch during that. I will say now the person that I talk to the most, besides Mallory, of course, mm-hmm. is Andre. Mm-hmm. And people always think that's funny, but I'm just like, we're like best pals now and we talk all the time.
Well, you guys had some beef for a while.
We did. Yeah, we did. He and I would argue back in the day over quite a few things. And we always kind of laugh and say that he had no backbone and I had way too much. And that's honestly very true. I think over the years, things have kind of balanced out for both of us. But it's just funny to both of us that people know us as like these two people who absolutely hate each other. But he's one of my oldest friends and we've been friends for the past like 13 years.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. Well, and it all started when my mom made me apologize to him for making him cry on national television.
Nice.
What is Andre up to?
Andre, unsurprisingly, works for Microsoft. He graduated college early because, again, genius level. And he works for Microsoft. He's doing well. He lives in Seattle and he's single. I am always I'm always saying that on all these because I'm like, ladies in Seattle, Andre is single, and guess what? He doesn't have a bowl haircut anymore.
He works for Microsoft. What a catch.
He's a catch, good right? Job,
yeah. We'll clip that and blast it out to our network. So maybe we'll find him a nice girlfriend.
Maybe he's running into the same problem on the dating apps. Everyone just recognizes him.
I don't think people are recognizing him. I will say we always kind of laugh and say that both of us were kind of done a favor by puberty because people didn't recognize either of us as much anymore. He's like a million feet tall and looks nothing like he did when he was little. So he's good to go.
That's the most you can ask for is if you're unintentionally famous when you're a kid to look as different as possible.
Yeah. And have a glow up.
Yes, I would like to thank Hair Dye for that.
It's always good to have a glow up for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, what was it like sleeping in a ghost town pretty much? Like, was it scary at night?
It's funny you asked that. So it's not a ghost town. It's a movie set.
I figured it was fake. I knew it wasn't like... Wasn't it like designed to be like a ghost town?
Yes, it was designed to be a ghost town. If you look, there are several movies like fairly recently that have used that set, and we'll always be able to pick it out because we'll be like, hey, I slept there. God. I slept on that floor.
You know, it did look kind of like a familiar place, but I assumed it was like generic Old West town.
Yeah,
it's because it's in several different movies and shows and stuff like that for Westerns. But yeah, actually... sleeping there kind of sucked. It kind of sucked, not gonna lie. There were gaps in the floorboards that were big enough for like little mice and bunnies to get into. So we would occasionally see a furry friend, just occasionally. I think the crew was like kind of trying to minimize the amount of animals that were coming in and out because we had gaps in our doors and our walls and the floors. Like logistically they could have gotten in anywhere, but we really, I mean, people ask me all the time, did you sleep in a hotel or anything? We really didn't. We really slept there on the floor. And although, okay, are you ready for my Kid Nation conspiracy theory? Okay, the challenge where one of the rewards was beds was rigged, I'm pretty sure, because I did the math and there's no way those beds would have fit in where we were sleeping. The sleeping bags were crowded together. There's no way beds would fit.
Which challenge was that?
That was the rocks. Pulling the rocks and carts.
Oh, yeah.
I think to win, everybody would have had to pull every single rock.
So we actually we didn't go as far as to calculate the beds, but I think Emmy brought up this conspiracy that she thinks that there's weren't enough rocks in the first place. Like they designed it
no matter what.
Purposely had like just fewer rocks than you could possibly take.
I think you're close.
Yep. I think you're completely right. We all, after that one, were like, wait a minute. How were we not even close? We pulled most of these. And then when the reward was beds, it felt kind of obvious because there's no way they would have fit where we were sleeping. So.
Also, it was like 50,000 pounds or something absurd like that?
It couldn't have been.
Yeah, it was something crazy. It was... like a ton or 2 tons or something. I don't know.
It was more than that. It was like something absurd. I've been on construction sites and I know for a fact that like grown ass construction workers, it would take like a whole gang of them like a day to carry that. No way like 40 kids are carrying anywhere near that much weight.
Yeah.
So sure, maybe it'll be like, oh, Greg and Blaine were strong. But yeah, they're 15. They're not that strong.
Right. Yeah, that's my Kid Nation conspiracy theory. I'm sticking to it.
I buy it.
Although I have heard some really fun ones over the years.
What are the other ones you've heard?
There was a big theory for a while that Taylor was Jonathan's daughter, which I thought was hilarious.
Jonathan was
That's not true. Yeah. Jonathan is the host.
I never knew his name. In my notes, I always put the creepy old guy.
Nice. There are many names for Jonathan. Jonathan was also one of the people that we made fun of behind the scenes and in my comedy routine. We all made fun of Jonathan. I kind of feel bad for him now because I'm like, man, you were just trying to do your job, and we were all out here making fun of you. I mean, and we did it in front of him, too. We were absolutely shameless. Well, he'd be sitting there, and he'd have to do his lines, like, a couple times sometimes. So we'd just literally have to stand there and, like, pretend that it was the first time we were hearing it every time. And so eventually, we'd start getting, like, these ridiculous reactions because we knew we were just bored and we were just messing around. But sometimes in the show, they used them. Like, we actually did have these major reactions to things Jonathan said. But half the time we really didn't, because it was like the fifth time we heard it.
That's actually hysterical.
Yeah. That group of kids was shockingly, shockingly sarcastic.
I'm surprised that you all could like stay quiet long enough for him to say anything.
Well, if we didn't do things quite right, we'd have to get into the scene again. And they, for some reason, always thought that kids ran wherever they went. So they'd make you, like, run into wherever you were
going. I was wondering about that.
And so we'd have to run there over and over again if you did it wrong. So we just, I mean, we knew what to do by then, you know? We were like, I'm not doing that again. Uh-uh. I am not running in here again.
Yeah. That's so stupid. Like, why do they think that children run places? That's just an unrealistic thought.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. I mean, any showdown, you'll see us running there. Yeah. We're not. They bussed us there. They put us on a bus, took us there, and then drove the bus away so you can't see the bus, and then they just make you, like, run around the corner.
That makes sense, though, because I thought it was stupid that they ran all the time.
Yeah, that was not by choice.
Interesting. I was wondering why you kids ran all the goddamn time. I was like, it makes no sense.
Yeah. We were not that full of energy. We were surviving on potatoes and candy.
Yeah. Would you have just died if the producers didn't step in to feed you?
Honestly, I wonder that sometimes. I'm like, what would have happened to us? I think this would have gotten real ugly real quick.
I was wondering how you guys had the energy to do anything, because even when like a competent person was cooking, you were getting like two potatoes each.
Right. That was the other reason that I think the crew had to step in with those meals. And they stepped in fairly early, because the beginning 2 days, there's almost no footage from the entire beginning 2 days, because we are all huddled inside because it's so cold, but also because we were not eating enough. And so we were lethargic. We didn't move very much. We just kind of sat there, and they were like, this is going to make a really freaking boring show. We've got to feed them.
Just children starving.
Yeah, so we got lunch every day, and then on a showdown day, there wouldn't be time to cook dinner, because the showdown, you know, takes time, and then after showdowns, we'd get to shower. Mm. People don't think about that, but I'm like, yeah, we did get to shower for like 5 minutes in cold water after a showdown, because they still want you to look dirty, but not like covered in baked beans, you know? So,
I was kind of wondering
about
that.
I wonder about that.
Yeah, I guess you had to shower, otherwise that would have been disgusting.
Yeah. Now, do you want to hear something hilarious that I did not realize until I was an adult? So, actually, this might be the first time I'm telling this. So, so the couple of showdowns where there's like water or anything like that. So all of the time we were all wearing a microphone, and it's like a little, it's like about the size of a deck of cards. It goes into like your waistband in the back, and then you've got the wire that clips up. And the water showdowns, they'd have to find some way to protect it so that the water didn't ruin the microphone. And I did not know at the time what the thing was that they were putting over the microphone. I was like, that's weird that you've got like this weird little plastic baggy looking thing made of, gosh, what are those made of? I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to tell you is I didn't know what a condom was. And they definitely put condoms on our mics to keep them from not getting water damage. None of us knew what they were, so it wasn't like, you know, but if it's like it's pretty funny as an adult.
That's actually really funny.
They're expensive.
Yeah, they would wrap them up before we would go. Yeah.
I did notice like there was that one showdown. It might have been the first one where the prize or one of the prizes you could choose was a water slide. And I'm like, that looks cold as fuck. Like, that looks like it's not.
Yeah, fun. Okay. It was like 30 degrees that day. All of us were like, okay, a water slide. Big whoop. It's 30 freaking degrees out, John. We have coats on.
And he's like, the water's heated.
Yeah, we were all like, okay, can we like make food with it or something? It's not really that useful to us.
How pissed were you when they didn't choose the barbecue?
Was that the toothbrushes one? No, I wasn't upset about that. We didn't have toothbrushes. Are you joking?
Was it the pizza? I mean, there was what? You missed pizza and barbecue.
The pizza one was what we were mad about. The pizza one we were really pissed about.
I mean, that's what it was. Yeah. What did you guys get instead of that? Was that like books?
A microwave.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know who can cook for 40 people in a microwave?
No one.
Without refrigeration? Nothing.
The one that I was surprised about was that you guys picked the Bibles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people always point to that and they're like, this show is rigged. And I'm like, oh, that actually did happen. That's well,
the,
true.
Yeah, did you guys, did anyone, read those things after, the couple scenes where they had it? Oh. So how did you have free time to do that?
They did. It's funny because I think a lot of people kind of point to that and they're like, what in the world kind of kids would pick that? And what you have to understand is they picked a lot of kids from academic programs or who had won national spelling bees or, were incredible piano players or whatever. It was a lot of really intelligent kids, some of whom already at 11 were like, what is the meaning of our existence? I mean, that scene was legitimate because they were really actually curious.
Wow. That's interesting. I mean,
I know.
I don't like reading that much to begin with. So I couldn't imagine at 10 being like, you know what? I'm going to sit down and do my free time. I'm going to read this dense ass holy book.
You also have to understand, we were very bored. We were very, very bored. Mm-hmm. We did not have a lot of stuff to do other than fight with each other, fight the producers. I don't know. I guess if you could afford going and getting a game of Jacks.
Yeah, that's not that exciting.
Jacks aren't fun. Have you played it before? Because it's fun exactly zero times.
I think I played it in kindergarten, but I don't think it was that good. Right. I didn't grasp it. Yeah. It made no sense.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
I don't really think about that.
Was there anything from Kid Nation that you actually enjoyed while you were there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny because, I'll crap talk producers all day long, but some of them were actually really nice people. There was one producer that Mallory got all buddy-buddy with, and at one point Mallory knew that I had had a bad day or something. Oh, I know what it was. I know what it was. I actually was old enough to have a period at the time, and that was some terrible crap. That was a terrible time to have one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to ask your producer for tampons.
Ooh.
Which was, again, as a 13-year-old girl, is just the most embarrassing thing in the world. So Mallory went to this producer and was like, she's having a really hard day. And the producer found us, bowls of cereal somehow. And I don't know how or why that happened, but, there were moments like that that were just like, oh, that's actually really nice.
That is nice.
But, I mean, a lot of the other people that we met there, I think, were really interesting and cool and went on to do cool things. And I think being around a really diverse group like that was good for Mallory and I because we had not experienced anything like that before. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Kid Nation was also where I learned what the word gay meant. That's true. There were experiences like that that I think really shaped the fact that both of us turned out to be people who really value diversity of all different kinds and stuff like that, because I think we didn't fully understand it before we had really met people who were super different than us.
That's good.
Really? Yeah, I feel like you kind of have to grow up quickly if you're in that situation.
Yeah, we did, and we all did it together. So, for better or worse, we're all kind of bonded by this super weird thing.
That's how it works. Whenever you have a weird thing, it can get people you'd never otherwise be friends with to be your best friends.
Yep.
Well, Olivia, is there anything else that we're missing that we should ask? Any last words?
Any last words? Okay, is the firing squad coming for me after this? I don't know. This is always such a weird experience talking about all of this and kind of rehashing a lot of it. But, it's interesting that the perspective on this show has changed wildly. I think while everybody's in quarantine and in 2020, Anjay and I decided that everybody has kind of honorarily earned their Kid Nation badge now that they've been trapped in a place where they could not go and see their families, where they didn't have a lot of options as to what they could do. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of people were panicking and all kinds of crazy crap was going on around them. I was like, we kind of looked at each other and we were like, 2020 is kind of like low-key Kid Nation in it. So,
one final question before we let you go, just to stay on brand for us.
Sure.
We talk about aliens and stuff a lot. You guys were in New Mexico. Did you ever see any UFOs or anything weird?
No, I didn't see any UFOs. I'm sorry. I didn't see any.
I haven't either. I wish.
All right. Well, thanks, Olivia.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on the show. Before you go, where can people buy your book and plug anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, sure. My book is on Amazon. It's also on Barnes & Noble's website. And for anybody who wants to shop a little smaller, there is a bookstore called Indie Reads that also sells my book. And it's local in Indiana, but they do have an online store. So hooray, shop local. Yay.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Olivia.
Hey, Leanne.
Hey, Alana.
Why should the people listen to Booze and Ghouls?
Well, I don't know. Maybe because they want to be entertained and informed at the same time.
And also, would you say that it's funny?
Hilarious.
He's also not a fan of men and will try to scare them off.
Well, listen, I've scared off a man or doing my day too.
He's still trying to run his ghost brothel.
I love it. Check out Booze and Ghouls.
A paranormal, true crime, and conspiracy podcast.
New episodes every Friday.
So this is Elizabeth Clare, alien lover.
Alien lover.
Alien lover. So basically, she is this South African woman. She lived from 1910 and passed away in 1994. Basically, throughout her life, she claimed to be in contact with an alien whose name, I'll give you one guess of what his name, you're never going to guess it, but I just want you to guess it. The name of the alien, and it's the name of a R&B singer.
Shaggy.
No.
Actually, back to the Super Bowl commercial. That's the one commercial that I remember well. It's the Shaggy one.
Oh, yeah. Shaggy one wasn't bad.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but that's like one of the few that I remembered. But yeah.
Her alien boyfriend's name is Akon. Nobody wanna see us together, 'cause I got Elizabeth. So, the first time she was visited by aliens, she was 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so Elizabeth and her older sister, Barbara, were outside their farmhouse where they lived. And they go up kind of by this hill and they see a silver disc. Ooh. And according to Wikipedia, it was bathed in a pearly luster that swooped over them.
Nice.
And then at the same time, there was a giant red, I guess, something that looked like a planet or a moon, with, like, rotating really high up in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So what they saw was the disc kind of like swooped low near them and then went up towards the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their first sighting. So they saw that and they were like, what the fuck? But never really thought of it as anything else until a few months later. So I guess this is in South Africa. So the Zulu people had this mythology of a lightning bird, which sounds a lot to me like Thunderbird.
Thunderbird.
We know Thunderbird. If you guys don't know Thunderbird, go back like two episodes.
It was our episode with Zach Kuhn, founder of Backboard Entertainment. I was in a Blackboard from college and the National Briefing and host of the Zach Kuhn Show. So go check that out.
Yes. So I did a whole segment on Thunderbird. But anyways, so there were a lot of sightings of Thunderbird on this particular hill, which was later called Flying Saucer Hill. So Elizabeth and Barbara hear that, you know, there's these rumors of the lightning bird on this hill. And so they figure that they have to go back and see if they're able to find that flying saucer that they saw.
Mm-hmm.
So miraculously, they go back, and the first time they go back, they see the saucer again. So they said that it hovered 3 meters above the ground. It was really quiet, and it was kind of spinning really rapidly. And then through one of the windows, which I don't really know how they saw if it was spinning that fast, but
the thing that's interesting is in all these stories, they can see through the window what the thing looks like.
Yeah. Well, that's like when I told the story of Miley Cyrus's alien encounter, she literally made eye contact with an alien that was riding on top of the spaceship.
Yeah, I don't know how that's possible.
But anyways, so she looks through the window, and who does she see but Akon?
Akon the alien or Akon like the singer rapper?
Akon the alien, but imagine if it was Akon the singer.
I know. You know, he's making like Acoin, like a cryptocurrency, and he's making like an Akon city in Africa.
Acoin?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's the currency for his Akon city in Africa.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're kind of freaked out, so they wait a little while, but eventually, about a year or two later, they do go back to that hilltop, Flying Saucer Hill. And again, miraculously, they see the saucer there, but this time, Akon lowers his ship and takes Elizabeth aboard.
Just Elizabeth, not her sister?
Just Elizabeth.
Was her sister, like, freaking out?
I don't know. I mean, her sister was a little bit younger. Maybe she was freaking out. I don't know.
Because the only acceptable response is to panic when your sister is abducted next to you.
Exactly. I'm going to read some descriptions. So she actually ended up writing a book, and I guess I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but it's called Beyond the Light Barrier, and it's a book about her whole life. And in it, she describes like everything she saw and even describes like some of the technology that they used in pretty explicit detail, which was pretty interesting. But she describes Akon and his crew as looking like humans, but taller, better looking, more considerate and gentle, and not aggressive or violent.
How old were she when this happened?
Let's see. This is in 1956.
And how old is she?
So she was born in 1910, so she was 46.
Oh, wow. So she was kind of old then.
Oh, I didn't realize how old she was, but she...
I was thinking she was like an 18-year-old, not a...
Me too.
46-year-old.
Oh, well, actually, I have an explanation for that. I will get to that later.
Okay.
Anyways, so they're not aggressive or violent. They dress very simply, and all their clothing is made out of silk. They look very glamorous. And a little bit about the place they lived. So Akon kind of debriefed her on like where they live, what their deal is. So basically they were from Venus. So they're not Martians.
They're Venusians.
They're Venusians. And I guess they kind of ran out of resources on Venus. So they went to Proxima Centauri, which...
That's like another galaxy, right?
Yeah, it's the star that's nearest to our star.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so they went to Proxima Centauri, but some of them stayed in our galaxy. And I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay.
So some of them stayed in our galaxy. But Akon is an astrophysicist. And that's why he has been the one on the ship visiting Earth. Okay. Oh, and interestingly enough, while she's in this spacecraft, they, I guess, transport her to a different spacecraft that is cigar-shaped.
Cigar-shaped?
Yeah.
That was hot in the streets back in the day. And also hot in the streets again lately, isn't it?
Yeah, and almost all of the UFO, credible UFO sightings that I've talked about on our show recently have been cigar-shaped UFOs.
So out of curiosity, because we've been talking about, did they describe what they looked like? Because remember the story I told like a week or two ago about the Wild West alien abduction of those two Californians, and the aliens were too weak to like lift them up?
Yeah.
And they were the first like reported cigar ones in America, at least, to the best of my knowledge. Like, do they describe them as like really skinny and like really tall?
She did describe them as very tall, and they kind of looked like humans.
I don't remember their names, but they didn't say that they looked like humans. But I remember them saying really tall, skinny, and weak. That they couldn't lift up
fully. Yeah, she said that they were very tall, but they were better looking humans. So I don't know if she's into really skinny guys or what, but
maybe she's into really skinny guys who can't lift up, who three of them can't lift up a 145-pound man.
I don't know. So she has this encounter, and then they let her down. She lives her life.
Uh-huh.
Now, 4 years later, she goes back to the same hilltop.
Mm-hmm.
And
so did that happen this first time, or like she just goes up there?
They just hang out, and she learns a lot and whatever. But this 4 years later, all that is said in the book, every source I've seen, just kisses were exchanged. Kisses were exchanged.
Wow.
So it is at this point that Akon reveals to Elizabeth that she is, in fact, a reincarnated Venusian. And in a past life, Akon and Elizabeth were soulmates.
Ooh.
And I guess still soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
So he explains, you know, as I mentioned, some of the Venusians stayed in our solar system. And actually, some of them are on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they look like humans.
Ah.
So he said that Venusians would sometimes take Earth women as their partners, and that's because it would strengthen both races, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he claimed that a number of Venusians are like Venusians and half Venusians are.
So half like human, half Venusian?
Yes. So some are half, some are all Venusian, are living on Earth right now. So that's pretty cool. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So in a interview I read with Elizabeth, she said that kind of her purpose and Akon's purpose are to inform those people of their true origin. Mm-hmm. And they also, you know, they had to leave Venus because they ran out of resources. So they want to kind of bring Venus back to life by educating people and eventually maybe starting a new population there.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, that can't happen. So Akon lives on the planet of Meton.
Where is Meton?
It's in that galaxy with the star that's closest to us.
Is it a real planet?
Yeah, it is.
Hmm. Interesting.
It is. So their plan is they want to, or I guess they do now, have bases. The Venusians have bases on the moon and Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to bring life back to the moon and Mars so they can eventually move back to Venus.
Okay.
Okay. You following?
Yeah, I'm following. I don't understand how our moon and Mars have any relevance with Venus, but okay.
I think they're just trying to get closer.
Slowly migrating back.
Yeah, the planet they're on right now is the closest. It's the closest galaxy to us, but mm-hmm. it's still 4 light years away.
Okay.
So, not close.
So they want to go back to their home planet of Venus.
Yeah, they want to go back to Venus. So here's where it's kind of crazy.
All right.
So Elizabeth and Akon, you know, they exchanged kisses, whatever. And then he tells her, we're soulmates. And she's like, all right, well, take me back to Meton. So Elizabeth goes up in this spaceship and lives with Akon for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And in this time, has a child.
Wow.
I guess the gestation period of a half human, half Venusian is 4 months or less.
It could be, but time also moves differently on different planets. So it could be something like that. Maybe she meant like 4 months on their planet, which maybe was 9 on ours.
That's very true. So she apparently had a lot of fun on Miton, but Akon was like, you can't stay here. Like, you have to go back to Earth. So once their son is born, he brings Elizabeth and the son. No, just Elizabeth.
Oh, because if there's Elizabeth and the son, I'm like, that's a guy who doesn't want to raise that kid.
Yeah, that's an important key, is the son continued to live on Miton, but Elizabeth came back to Earth, and Akon and the son would visit them.
That'd be so funny if he, like, this alien knocked her up and is like, you know what, you have to go back to your planet, and just like, I didn't want to pay for the child.
Well, what I was thinking is, like, someone's got to talk to that kid.
Yeah.
Because if she had some kind of, like, psychotic break or something, like, there are 4 months of her life that are completely unaccounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Who's this kid's dad?
Yeah, I know, right? There's a chance that these aren't aliens.
Yeah, but it seems like the son...
But in 4 months, how could a kid have been born?
That's the big question. That is the big question. So I would like to, at this point, read you a few passages from her book, Beyond the Light Barrier.
All right.
So just to give you an idea. So in the book, she talks about, like, how all she wants to do is just, like, promote this idea of, like, a better world. And, like, she wants us to think more cosmically, like, you know, we're not just all one with humans, we're all with the universe, and which is cool. Anyway, so she also does have some questionable things in the book, like promoting conspiracy theories and some kind of international cover-up to keep her relationship secret, yada yada yada. But
yikes.
On the whole, this is an erotic novel.
So she just creates some erotica, basically.
This is an erotic novel of her and her alien boyfriend, husband, baby daddy.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read you two passages that I think really encapsulate what this book is all about.
Please do.
So, actually, before I get there, so I got this story on the great podcast, That's Why We Drink, and that's where I got the idea for it. And they said, if you're looking through her book for the erotic pieces, just find and search the word chin. Because chin, she says it like 100 times throughout the book, and it's all at the sexy parts. She's like obsessed with his Akon's chin.
That's so strange. Well, everyone has their like kinks.
That's their thing. All right, so here we go. Gently he put his hand under my chin, tilting my head up and back, and looked deep into my eyes. My love, my life, my chosen mate, he whispered, his voice soft with emotion. I will return to possess you and sow the seed of my love within your delicate body.
These sound like words that only come out of erotic novels.
Right? The mark of my love will remain within your soul forever. Gathering me up in his arms, he held me close for a moment before carrying me out of the luxurious room and away along a wide and beautiful stairway.
Wow. You know what this reminds me of? I'm going to redact some names here. Where we went on like all those like little service trip things.
Yeah.
So I forgot exactly who was in the group. The only person I remember for sure is when I were sorting books at a VA, right? Mm-hmm. And we sorted like 300 erotic novels. And this is at a VA. So these are veterans, like Vietnam vets. I have a photo. I'll have to send it to you later. But we took a photo at the end, holding two novels next to our stack of erotica novels, because we were supposed to sort them by category. Then I jokingly took over erotica because I found like two boxes full of them, and they just kept piling on.
Oh my god, that's funny.
Yeah.
At the VA.
It's like a VA too. So this is not the crowd.
Not the crowd. Maybe it is.
It could be, actually. It very well could be. I don't really know, but.
All right. So here's the second quote. This one's a little longer.
All right.
This one gets intense. So like, get Ooh. Ready.
I'm ready.
This is why our show has an explicit warning.
Oh, yeah.
So, standing naked before the mirrors, I found a silver-mounted hairbrush. Taking my long golden hair, I brushed it out to dry after the shower. There was movement in the mirrors. Without a sound, Akon came behind me and put his lips to my hair, tumbling it against my face and burying his lips into its mass. Holding me close to him, he removed a ring from his little finger and placed it over my middle finger. It was an exotic and beautiful, made of beaten silver and green enamel, with a great stone of light set in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It is too large for you, my beloved one, so we will place a half band of silver within it. I want you to wear it always as a part of me to maintain our telepathic connection for all time. I could feel and sense magic properties emanating from the ring. Akon put his hand under my chin, tilting my head up and back, and he kissed me with long and lingering kiss on the lips. Picking me up in his arms, he carried me to the silken platform by the curved walls. Its firm softness supported our bodies with luxurious comfort as I gave myself to the man from outer space. My beloved, my life, Akon whispered again and again, as I surrendered. So I surrendered in ecstasy to the magic of his lovemaking. Our bodies merged in magnetic union as the divine essence of our spirit became one, and in doing so, I became whole. Like, not only is it a weird alien sex thing, it's like also just objectively bad erotic novel. Like, it's poorly written. Like, stupid.
What's this person's obsession with chins?
I gave myself to the man from outer space. That was my favorite line.
If this is consensual, are you really surrendering anything?
In the last quote, he was like, I will return to possess you and sow the seed of my love within your body. That doesn't sound fun at all.
Translation. I'm not going to use a condom.
You're so right. How funny is that?
That is bonkers. I love it. That's a great story. Is there any more to it?
I mean, that's pretty much it.
Is she still alive?
She died in 1994.
Oh, before we were even born, damn it. But actually, I guess 1910 should be like 110, 11 years old. That's kind of old.
Yeah, she died shortly before we were born, so.
Yeah, we also probably wouldn't have been that successful interviewing a 111-year-old.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a fun story.
Isn't it fun?
It's unique.
It's a good one for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it is. Remember when I said I was going to read Kissing the Coronavirus? It's an erotic novel on Amazon that's 15 pages long.
Yeah.
We should do that, actually. Maybe not next episode, but at some point, we need something to fill the void of Kid Nation. We should both
read. A dramatic reading.
A dramatic reading of Kissing the Coronavirus. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to the show. Awesome episode. Thank you for joining us.
This one was a lot of fun. This was probably one of my favorite episodes we've had in a while.
I think so, too. A good way to wrap up Kid Nation is just finding out. We were originally going to do, like, a Where Are They Now? But I think this is almost better, talking to Olivia.
Oh, totally. We get behind the scenes. Olivia was an awesome guest. Everyone should definitely go check out her book.
We're going to link to her book in our episode notes. And we're going to eventually have a blog about it. Yeah, so thanks for coming in. As always, check out our website for additional content. We write blogs. We write a couple a week. We also have a newsletter, which you should sign up for. we're going to start having some more exclusive stuff on there to incentivize you guys to sign up. It's misfitsandmysteries.com. Check out our merch store through TeePublic. And if you like the show and want to support us, consider donating. Ow. It's like putting against something. I don't know. It stung. And if you like us and want to support the show and give us a couple bucks, consider donating to our Buy Me a Coffee page, which will be linked in the episode notes.
And if you don't have any money like me, maybe you can write a review instead, which is also very helpful.
And don't forget to subscribe because so you don't miss a thing. It's free to subscribe. Oh, also going forward, welcome all of our YouTube listeners. We have a buddy of mine who does this stuff professionally who's going to be running our YouTube channel for us for free. So thanks, Zach. And if you're a YouTube listener, don't forget to like and subscribe to this video.
Yeah. All right. Stay spooky, guys.
Bye.
Bye.